Hi there, everyone. This is the It's Your Move podcast for this previous Sunday that we've just listened to, Act Chapter 1 of the story. And I think it was a fascinating creation and the human calling. Welcome, Vanna.
Thank you very much. Good to be here, as always.
Now, let's get right in, Vanna. So you're obviously painting a picture initially, kind of looking at the whole story, and then moving back into Act Chapter 1 and describing this concept of creation and the human calling through what we read in Genesis 1 and 2. Now, in your own words, now, how would you see that as being different from the traditional view of creation and our interpretation very often of the beginning of Genesis?
Okay, well, one, as always, my view is certainly a view, and it's not the view. But for me, that's probably where the difference comes in, and what I've named it is creation and the human calling.
Mm.
Okay, so I think the traditional view of creation is God created a world almost for us, and in order to be in relationship with us, which then makes us the center point of creation and the center point of everything that God is doing. Where what I'm proposing here is that we are not the center of what it is that God is doing, but we are the center of his creation, but creation is what he is doing. So in other words, God created a world that is good but not perfect, and that's also the traditional view, is God created a perfect world which we then through sin messed up. There's obviously some partial truth in that in my mind. But saying that God didn't create a perfect world and we messed it up, he created a good world that we were supposed to take somewhere, which is a big difference. And obviously, where is that somewhere? Now, traditional view, that somewhere is just for me to be in a relationship with God and walk in the garden, almost like the we were created to just be in a relationship with God. Even the idea of God was almost lonely. Some of the songs play it that way. That God was almost lonely, and so he needed someone to love, and so he created us to love, put us in this garden where we would just walk in the garden together and be happy. Versus now, we were actually created with intent, and that intent was to image him into the world and to expand the garden, which is very purposeful. And then to move the garden somewhere, aka the world itself is not the garden, but the garden is in the world and must be expanded all over the world. I don't know if that sounded confusing.
I mean, I think it's... I think it is confusing to some extent. Any time we have to change our view of something, there can be some complexity. But I do think it makes sense, and I think it makes sense as you read it. I think they are the kinds of passages where if I had to ask the average member in the church when the last time you read through the first 11 chapters of Genesis, it most probably was a long time ago. And I think it's very easy to feel like, well, I learned about the Garden of Eden in Sunday school, and now I've got it, as opposed to really going back and having a look at what was written.
True.
So one of the points that you made throughout the sermon, and you brought this up in the introduction as well, is this idea that how we read one of the acts or certain portions of the story will impact the rest of how we read the Bible. Or, each act, each portion of the Bible has a lot of context before it and obviously a certain trajectory afterwards. How does our reading of creation and the human calling, and potentially misreading it, and I know we're learning all together here, how does that impact how we read the rest of the Bible?
Well, part of it briefly will become clearer when we do Act 2, which I currently call, and obviously just to be clear on everything again, I know nothing of myself. Everything is that I read, learn, think through, pray through, have conversation about, and sometimes terminology that I use come from somewhere else, but I don't even know it because it's been in my head for so long, or I created it and I don't know that I've created it. So just to be clear that I'm taking no credit for any terminology or anything else. But in Act 2, what I call, and it doesn't have to be called that way, but I call rebellion and the fall out, because we just view it usually as the fall. The terminology that I'm using is to try and be able to shape us and how we rethink some of these things. And some of it will become clearer as we do Act 2, rebellion and the fall out. But how it changes, for instance, and what we just discussed previously will be, if my view of Genesis 1 and 2 is God created a perfect world versus a good world, and he created, meaning a complete world that didn't have to go somewhere. The purpose of it all was just to be in a relationship with me and to walk with him in the garden and to be worshipful to him. So we're singing all the time, what have you. And that then gets broken in Genesis 3, that relationship and that perfection. Then it means I need to, my purpose now is to return to that.
Mm.
And so the return is I want to be back in a relationship with God, and I want to be back in the perfect garden, which we traditionally have now suddenly shifted to heaven. So heaven now becomes, as a disembodied soul, I'm now in heaven. That's not the goal. Then I'm going to read the rest of the Bible through that lens. How do I get back into heaven? How do I restore the relationship? And the relationship needs to be restored. I'm not saying it doesn't need to be restored, but everything will be viewed through that. So now suddenly I'm going to read the Torah as the Torah is the way back to heaven. Mm. If we are able to perfectly keep Torah, if I'm able to perfectly keep Torah as a Jew, I am back into heaven, which I've never left because I was never in heaven to start off with.
Mm.
So if everything is looked at through that lens in terms of that, as I just said, that I need to keep Torah to get back to heaven, and now I can't, so now Jesus does it on my behalf so that I can get back to heaven, but now he sort of gives us the gospel so that I can get back to heaven. The whole point is get back to heaven, get back into a relationship with God. Mm. Again, there's some truth in that.
Mm.
How this whole story changes by what I'm suggesting, the terminology creation and the human calling, is if my human calling is to be the icon of God, be the image of God, expand the garden, and that is what's broken in Genesis chapter 3, then that is what I need to return to.
Mm. Mm.
So I need to return to be, and we'll use this terminology, which now can be semi-funny terminology, but truly human again. And truly human means what did God, what was the original intent for me to be a human, as in how God designed humanity, which is now broken, that I need to want to, through God's help and guidance, repair so that I can be what? So that I can be the icon of God once again and expand the garden, which is a very different view and a very different outlook. So the different focus in how I will read the Bible is traditional view is very me-centered.
Mm.
It's all about me. I'm the center of the universe. God is there to save me, serve me so that I can go to heaven, that I can be with him, and it's about me. Versus what I'm suggesting here through a different lens is now, the focus is actually God and his creation and him wanting to take his creation somewhere. And instead of us taking it there, losing our way, and he's trying to get us back on track to take his creation somewhere again, which is to be the image, to expand the garden so that the glory of the Lord may, or knowledge of the glory of the Lord may fill the earth as the water covers the seas. Habakkuk 2:14, whatever it is. I don't know if that helps.
No, it does. And I think you know, when you went through each of the questions and you kind of looked at a kind of traditional, kind of off the cuff, without really thinking too much more deeply about it, the answer that keeps coming up is, well, to get to heaven. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think often it feels like I just need to make it to heaven. I just need to persevere until I get to heaven. I just need to help other people get to heaven. And I think what has helped me, because some of this feels very complicated, and it feels like, does that mean I need to throw out everything that I've always believed? And I think the idea that's helped me a lot is the idea that it's this, let's say I really like pizza, and my view on the story is like a slice of pizza, and I love it, and that slice looks wonderful, and I'm very excited about my slice of pizza. I think what we're experiencing now is all of a sudden we're stepping back a little bit, and it's not just a slice, but there's been a whole pizza that we haven't really been looking at. And now all of a sudden the richness of what the scriptures are saying and kind of the depth is not as blunt and as simplistic as, well, I'm just trying to make it to heaven. There's something far deeper that God had planned, and I think that's very exciting as we wrestle with what we are here for.
Because if this becomes clearer to me, I'm going to read the Bible very differently. Mm. So if I read it through the traditional view, then again, I'm wanting to get to heaven and be in a relationship with God. And now I'm reading something that I feel like, but I can't be this. That means I'm not going to be able to be in a relationship with God. I'm not going to be able to get to heaven. Now I start to feel guilty.
Mm.
Okay. And now I try to figure out how to work through my guilt. And the only way that I can now be saved is it must be God's grace, because I cannot do it. Mm. Again, all the focus of this whole thing is on me.
Mm.
Versus, no, what I'm trying to be is the icon of God. I'm trying to be truly human. And the scriptures are teaching me what are we supposed to look like as the new humanity?
Mm-hmm.
And that God's favor now comes into our lives to help us and renew us to be that new humanity. Mm. It's just a very different perspective and way of reading the Bible.
Yes.
That becomes God-focused and His purpose-focused, and His purpose-focus, aka creation, versus me-focused.
Yes. So let's look at those. Let's look at those again. So you mentioned the idea, which I think is wonderful. So there's this story that we can read through the scriptures about, and we are entering the story now in the 20th century, 21st century, and we are now reading a text given to us by God that was written for us, but not to us, which I think is a very important point. And we're wrestling with this idea of what it means to be an icon. Make that practical for me. I mean, what does my day-to-day life look like as someone who's given allegiance to God and is now fighting to be an icon?
Okay. So, okay, I'll take again traditional view versus this view of icon. Okay, so traditional view, what does my day-to-day look like? My day-to-day look like is somehow I must be in good behavior, somehow I must do the right thing, I must deny myself, and my main mission in life is to get myself to heaven and to get other people to heaven. And what I do here at work or everything else, as long as I don't swear or as long as I invite other people, that's sort of the purpose, and now I'm good.
And your quiet time is to fill up the tank in the morning so that you can do all those things.
To give you the energy to do it again. Okay, so now, there are again some truths in that. I'm not saying that that's not true. This view is different in terms of being an icon, and I use the mirror ball to try and explain it.
Mm.
Is if I'm supposed to, we as a family group and me as a person are supposed to be a mirror ball reflecting God's image into the world. And so what does it look like for me from a day to day? Is wherever I go, whatever I do, how do I bring you about new creation wherever I am?
Mm.
And that is not by converting people, and I'm not saying that people should not be converted. But what I'm saying is the way that I treat people, the way that I handle things differently, the way that I handle traffic, which I personally don't enjoy or handle well. Everything that I do, I'm praying in the morning and asking myself, how can I now physically or try to envision it in my mind what that mirror ball looks like, and what would that mirror ball look like if I walk into the office? What would that mirror ball look like if I walk into Tiger Valley, if I walk into the shop, if I interact with people, if I get bad customer service again, which is difficult for me? What would that mirror ball look like? How do I reflect new creation? How do people see a new humanity inside of me? How do they see me? Because we'll speak about that, I assume, later in the Rule and Reign part, but how I do my job. Now, I'm in the ministry, so not me, you work for Unilever. How do you rule and reign, meaning how do you work at Unilever in a way that would reflect God's beauty, splendor, and majesty?
Mm.
That's a very different ball game than I'm just trying to not do wrong, okay, and trying to not feel guilty and trying to do what's right or good and deny myself versus now I'm supposed to mirror light into wherever I go. My interaction with my kids, my interaction with my spouse, my interaction with other people. Everything that I do is how do we bring about, God wants to work in us and through us. He wants to bring about new creation in us and then through us. And God is not going to be able to work through me if I've not allowed Him to work in me. So I must be renewed in order to renew wherever I go, which is more than just studying the Bible with my friends. Certainly inclusive, but more.
Yes. And look, I mean, just I think on that, I think there's a lot to be said about this view and how limited I think some of us, and certainly from a number of interactions that I have, can be when it comes to what does it mean to be doing this life and to be giving my life to Jesus. And I, you know, a lot of the conversations can be around, well, man, my quiet times aren't doing so well. I feel like, you know, my life's a little bit chaotic and I'm struggling to make it to family group on time, or, you know, I'm feeling tired and I'm not sure if I want to serve in the song ministry or in the lighting and AV room, or, And it's just this very limited view of what we're here for. And I think I do, as you described a little bit earlier, it feels a little bit like there's a sense from a number of people, and I can't say this of everyone, is I'm just trying to do the right things in order not to fall off the path to heaven. And there isn't that same feeling of I'm striving to be an icon. I'm striving to be and to bear God's image into the world. And it's very limiting in terms of not only how you view yourself, but also what you do to try and correct it. Because then all of a sudden it becomes, well, let me just have a little bit longer quiet times, or wake up a little bit earlier, or sign up for Kids Zone. And again, it's I think like you described earlier, it's the wrong solution to the situation. There's a whole paradigm shift that needs to happen.
And this is where I think the expand the garden comes in as well. And that's just a terminology that I use. But if you look at it, what God's intent is,
yes.
As I've said before, and I think in the class, is the whole world is not Eden. Eden is on the world, and Eden must be expanded.
Mm.
So the beauty of Eden must be expanded. The advancement of the whole garden, the work into Tull must be expanded. The relationship with God must be expanded. The relationship with one another must be expanded. Now, what we can easily do in this sort of almost create a split world where I have my Christianity that basically happens after hours, and I'll explain the in hours just now. After hours, I get to rest, I get to be with other Christians that we have similar ideas and views, and we get to reach out to friends, be together, have dinners together, but this is sort of the safe place.
Mm.
Then I need to, tomorrow morning when I get to work, I'm back into the storm, and the goal here is one of two things, or combination. Don't sin, invite other people.
Mm.
Okay, which is very different to expand the garden. So expand the garden, I explained the sermon at the end, the idea of you living in a desert, and here is a family that has been able to build a wonderful garden inside of it, and they want to expand the garden all over the world, and they're inviting other people into the family to expand the garden and make it bigger and bigger and bigger. And so what I should be bringing to the workplace is I should be bringing new creation to the workplace. So it's not I'm going to start being a Christian afterwards or just try and survive through the workplace. How do I bring the garden? Now, if I say the garden, meaning what life was like with God and his original intent, how do I bring that to the workplace so that wherever I work is transformed? Whether people become Christians or not, my presence, because wherever you put God, there's transformation, new creation takes place, is wherever I go, day to day, at work, everything that I do, new creation needs to somehow happen in me and through me to my work environment.
Mm.
And not, sure, I made it through the day, and now let me go and be a Christian. Now let me rush to the meetings. Now let me go to family group. I don't even have the energy to go to family group, which I understand, it's been a long day. But almost now I'm going to go to my so-called spiritual activity versus realizing that, yes, I'm going to be part of the family group, but spiritual activity was the whole day.
Mm.
Icon was the whole day. Expanding the garden was the whole day, wherever I went, whatever I did.
Mm, mm, mm. And I mean, let's talk a little bit about this expanding the garden in terms of how it translates into family groups. Because I do think that there is, and I've been guilty of this, and I certainly know a number of us listening to the podcast either have been or even now are guilty of this, is seeing family group as an event and a church structure as opposed to a family that is a crucial part of expanding the garden. And I think it comes in a number of ways. It comes in the idea that, yes, I've got my family, and then, you know, once or twice a week I meet with other disciples in what we call family group, but it's not really my family. We're not doing life together. I miss it, you know, whenever something else more important comes up, or even relationally within the group, you know, this idea that, yes, I'm in the group and I attend the meetings, but I'm not close to people, and I'm not vulnerable, and I'm not really deeply connected because I've got other friends outside of the group. And I think there's a real potential for disconnect in terms of what we're actually doing here. So, you know, paint a picture for us of what you understand and what we're working towards in terms of the role of a family group in expanding the garden.
Okay. So one of the things that has most helped me through time is my own family, looking at that, Lisa, myself, the three girls, how we are trying to be a family, what would make us a family, or what would not make us a family. Certainly for us to have a family night once a week will not make us a family.
Mm.
Now, that family night plays a big role in us being a family, but that's not what makes us a family. What makes us a family is day to day. I also know that each family, like my family, has its own challenges and things that we are now just trying to even manage our own family, and now we need to be a part of another family called a family, called a family group. What my family is doing is day to day, we're involved in each other's lives. The girls do different sport, they have different interests. How am I part of those interests? Each of them in their education, it looks differently. How they're working through it is differently. Lisa and I work through different things. How are we intertwined in each other's lives day to day through that?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, family group, and that's also a terminology that I've been trying to change for us, where we, instead of calling it Bible talk, we call it family group, and that's just when the group meets as a family. Because I think it makes a big difference in terminology. It's not an event. There is an event which is like family night, but day to day.
Mm-hmm.
If you and I are in a family group together, I mean, we're not even in a family group together, but do I know what's happening in your world? Do I know what's happening in your life? Am I prayerful about those things? Am I interested in those things? Am I supporting you in those things? Are we speaking on a very regular basis? Are we mentioning things to each other? Are we just good friends like everyone else in the world? Or do we practice the one another scriptures in our day-to-day life where we are helping one another to be the image?
Mm.
But I think that for me is the ideal family group, is intertwined in each other's lives on a daily basis to one degree, and I'd rather say on a very regular basis, definitely not once a week. Okay, and I'm not saying the whole group should meet every day, but there should be interaction, there should be spiritual interaction between each other every day. And I've said this a million times to you, to others, being the church, what you and I are discussing here is a lot more being the church than what we meet for family group or than we meet for Sunday service. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have those, but this matters a lot more. And the more we can have these kind of conversations where we are able to come back and say, listen, at work today, it's like, yes, I sinned. Yes, I wasn't kind to the colleague, whatever, but I'm wrestling with how to be an icon at work. How do you do it? How do we talk about this? Can you pray for me, not to get angry with my colleague, but how do we do this? This daily conversation, that is the family.
Mm.
That is the garden. So now how do we expand it? My hope, dream, desire that I envision for us in Cape Town is that every neighborhood could have a family like that.
Mm-mm-mm.
And not... I want to almost say every sub-suburb. So let's take Durbanville. Durbanville has many sub-suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
Bellville has many sub-suburbs. Rondebosch has, there's Rondebosch, Rosemont. These things are all next to each other. And Mitchell's Plain has a ton of sub-suburbs. How do we get a family like this in each sub-suburb?
Mm.
Okay? A thriving family like this, that no matter where I live in Cape Town, I am able to be in close proximity to someone whom I can do life with.
Mm.
And then the goal becomes not just do we help other people become Christians and add them to the group, but do we multiply and do we plant these family groups in other sub-suburbs so that we can, in that sub-suburb, create this opportunity where people can have a home.
Mm.
A place where they would be loved, a place where they will be called higher, a place where they can do life together with each other, a place where we together play the role of showing people what true humanity looks like and how we are, our new creation is happening inside of us and through us. And even with our issues, meaning where, because this can sound like people think, oh, we're saying we should be perfect, and to a degree, yes, because perfect is complete. But part of being complete is so I drop the ball, so I mess up, so I have weaknesses. How do I navigate my way through it? Do I feel sorry for myself? Do I hide? Or do I take God's plan? And I talk about it and I bring other people into the circle.
Mm.
So that's my hope and dream. Can we see that happening in every sub-suburb? And then how do we expand it from there?
Mm.
So then we go and we say, okay, well, can we plant another, I won't even say church, another family group somewhere?
Mm.
And so the goal for me, it's not planting churches, but it would more be planting family groups.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes eventually, well, church being people of God, yes, it's the people of God, but we're not planting Sunday services.
Yes.
We're planting little communities, and in that way we're expanding the garden. And that community then, when it becomes a certain size, meets on a Sunday for worship services and teaching.
Yes. Amazing. Question. So there's obviously, you know, as we move towards this as a goal, they're going to be, and we're all at different places spiritually and in our lives, but there are going to be people, you know, within our congregation listening to this podcast now that, you know, if they had to be honest with themselves, are maybe leaning more towards being religious than image bearing. So they tick a lot of the religious boxes and they're not getting drunk every weekend and, but, you know, are they living a life of true allegiance, and is their calling clear? Maybe not so much. And it's the same with a family group, that yes, they are members of a family group and they come to the meetings, but as you describe, the closeness and the vulnerability and the day-to-dayness of life in a family group, arguably they spend their life in their own family and amongst their work colleagues, and then they'll arrive at church or arrive at family group and be wonderfully friendly and then disappear again, only to be seen a week later. Having said all of this, understanding that I don't think that's the way people want to be. I think that if you are in our family of churches, there's a desire to please God. Mm. Absolutely.
Totally.
And the intentions, from my experience, generally are very, very good. But there's a challenge. Life is complicated. Schedules are busy. There's a heavy burden of many different kinds. How would you help or encourage, or what could someone do to take a step towards what we're talking about here? Those that are on the fringe, those that are that are on the periphery, both as icons and as members of a thriving family group and part of the plan to expand the garden.
Okay, this will be a fairly longish answer, which I don't think we're going to be able. I see we're almost coming up to 30 minutes in the podcast here, but maybe I can give the headlines and we can do another podcast on that. Would be, and again, you've heard me say this many, many times. I am, and I know it frustrates some people, which I can understand, very principle-based. Mm. So for me, what helps me with principles is principles gives me a true north to aim for. And I think when I communicate principles, people think I'm saying we need to just be perfect. And it sounds so easy when you say it that way, but on the ground, it's not. I'm well aware of that. But when you have principles guiding you and you're in the messiness on the ground, you constantly look to the principles and say, how do I get back to the principles as a guiding force to get me to where I want to be? So in the most simplistic way, and we can, I almost want to say two packages to do this, but the most simplistic way I would always, and this is for myself and for others, everything that I try and teach others is principles that I try and teach, that I try and work from myself, would be three things. Know that I have a problem, number one. Number two, know that my problem is an actual fact a problem. And number three, attend to it. Okay? Mm. So let's say, in what you now said, again, we can unpack those three things in another podcast. But so I'm being more religious than what I'm part of a family that's expanding the garden. Okay, know that I have a problem. Do I know that I'm more religious than anything else? Do I know that even in the Church of Christ, I'm just being very religious? Am I aware of it? Okay, so know that I have a problem. If I don't know that I have a problem, then I'm not going to be going anywhere.
Mm.
Number two is the hardest one. Okay, number two is, know that my problem is an actual fact of problem. So I might know, sure, I know I'm religious. Sure, I know I'm ticking the boxes. Sure, I know that I'm going through the motions. But I'm not realizing this is an actual fact of problem. In other words, I'm not expanding the garden. I'm drifting. I'm not being a God has made me to be. And the biggest killer in this is me, because I'm not going to be happy. Because I'm not who God made or designed me to be. But if I don't see that my problem is an actual fact of problem, then I'm not going to be attending to it, which then brings us obviously to three, to now I need to attend to it, and we can practically talk about how to do that.
Mm.
But if I don't get number two, I think most people get number one, try to skip number two to then hop to number three.
Mm.
So I know that I have a problem, but I don't know that in actual fact it is a problem. So now I, how would I describe it? I try and throw things at it. I try and slap things together because I'm trying to pay some form of attention to it, again, so that I won't feel guilty, or that I'm at least being a good Christian because I'm supposed to love God. versus if I see that in actual fact my problem is a problem, it creates a sense of urgency that then changes the whole way that I attend to it. And that, I think, that principle for me applies to any given situation, whether it is that I'm working through stuff in my marriage, my parenting, sin, purity, I'm talking too much, I'm talking too little, I'm arrogant, I'm not arrogant, I'm whatever. Know that I have a problem. Know that my problem is in actual fact a problem, and then attend to it. And maybe we can unpack that on another podcast. That's three, and then even the other nine.
Amen. Well, I think we are indeed out of time. And thanks. A fascinating conversation. Look forward to unpacking more of the story of the Bible and lessons around that over the next couple of weeks.
Amen. James, thank you. And my hope and prayer for all of us is, I think temptation might be to be overwhelmed. I hope that we'll not be overwhelmed, but rather inspired. And so, hey, let's enter this new journey and let's do it together. Thanks, everybody.
Amen. Cheers, everyone.